Hello and welcome to Smutterly Ridiculous. I'm your co-host, Jack. Joining me is...
Max, also a co-host.
The reason we started this podcast is to answer one simple question. Who is Eric Vahl?
Now that is sort of a tricky question to answer, Jack. I've done a bit of Googling, and
yeah.
He doesn't appear to be man.
Okay, well, I think... At first, what we need is a little background for Eric Vahl, for the 10 or so people in the world who don't know who he is.
Yeah, so about how long ago was it now?
It was probably about 5 days ago. I was looking for an audiobook. And on the website I was going through, I noticed one of the reviews tagged with Harem. So, since my brother-in-law was there, I did what anyone would do. I clicked on it to see the other ones. Some of the titles were absolutely ridiculous. But, on the first page I was looking at, all of them were written by the same guy.
Yeah, and that seems to be the case. About every 8 days on average?
Yeah.
He seems to release a whole... Alexa, shut up.
That's staying in.
He seems to write an entire feature-length novel. We're talking like, I don't know, page counts, but like 13 hours audiobook.
Time. Yeah. Well, a lot of them say 485, but that's on a Kindle, so it might be a little...
A little less.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's averaging about 12,000 words a day.
Yeah, and
figured.
And if the topic of conversation and the fact that Max said fucky wasn't enough of a giveaway, there will be some explicit language throughout.
But only very briefly, and if you blink, you might miss it, as I found.
Yes, that's exactly what happened when Max had the fucky scene in his book.
Yeah. Apparently there's some... I'm not going to beat around the bush. These books are technically erotica, but I mean that in the loosest sense possible, whereby I was listening to an audiobook. I believe this one was Dungeon Master.
Yep, Dungeon Master 1.
Yeah, the first in the Incredible series. Apparently there was a sex scene somewhere in it. I missed it. I found the whole tale somewhat heartwarming, if anything.
Yeah, and that's sort of a through line where I know that erotica must usually be, in some level, character-driven, because if none of the characters show up, it doesn't really do much.
But the thing I would expect it to warm would not be my heart.
Yes, indeed. So, 102 weeks since his debut, he's written approximately, I think it's 91 novels published when I checked yesterday.
In fact, can't we due out one today?
Yes. So if there is, we'll include it in the, description. So how do you try and figure out this guy? Well, we did what reasonable people do, and I split the list of books down the middle. 45 for Max, 45 for me.
Have you got your list? Mine's in front of me. I can read it out.
Yeah, feel free to read yours. I don't have my list on me, though.
So there's 8 Dungeon Master books, each one of those, you know, a similar size. 3 Planet Broker, which is a very interesting concept. It's real estate real estate agents in space. There's Succubus Lords, which is one of his premier series. I'm very looking forward to getting started on.
16 of those, so...
16 of those. 16 of Summoner as well. Not quite sure what that's about. Not actually read anything on Summoner yet. But again, 16, it's got to be a moneymaker. And Princess Master, who we think... there's only 2 books, and we think it is hopefully a legally copyright-safe Disney ripoff.
Yeah, looking at the cover art, it's... I can't remember. Is it Futurama where they have the characters that say, "We resemble but are legally distinct
independent from the Lollipop Guild.
That's what it appears to be, with Jasmine and Elsa knockoffs on the book one and Ariel on book 2.
Yeah, and I can only assume that there's a very good reason for them being legally distinct from Disney.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like there's... Max, this might shock you to hear. There are some explicit images online of some of the Disney princesses.
Yeah, but not many in a media that the author profits from.
Yeah.
I don't quite count Rule 34 as quite the same as audiobooks.
No, it's primarily for fun.
Yeah. Don't I know it.
So the first series that I went for wasn't... So Max started with Dungeon Master, which was the first series he published. I decided to go for one from the middle of mine, because, for one, it's a slightly shorter series than some of them. And frankly, I know it's going to get weird, so I figured maybe we start with the one with a big titty anime cat girl on the cover.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's called Making Monster Girls. And there's not really... I suppose I should say, more than anything, the shocking thing is that they're not terrible.
No, it was quite listen-to-able. It sounded good on the ear hole. I felt for the characters. The first half of mine was a bit slow, but got really, really, really got going in the second half.
That makes it sound like there was more sex scenes than
God, no, not at all. one, apparently, but, you know.
Yeah, and it just sort of adds to this whole feeling of, this guy doesn't want to be writing erotica.
No, on the contrary, it seems that, although he's... what I hear, quite good at it, the sex scenes are by far what he is least into.
Yeah.
If it is indeed a he and not an it or a she.
Yeah, which is...
Or a them.
Yeah, which are all ideas that we'll be covering. I suppose, do you want to tell me about the book that you read, and then I'll tell you about mine?
I will indeed. Our story starts with three... sort of wet behind the ears adventurer women entering a dungeon, and the whole thing is narrated by the dungeon's master, who is, as we will come to find out, a fallen god who was trapped in the dungeon. And later on we also find out that all dungeons, in fact, are there to trap fallen gods. So this dungeon master, it plays out like, you know, the first few levels of Dungeon Keeper, really. You sort of send goblins at them, they fend them off. Eventually they all leave the cave. I can't even remember how the god ends up with them. But they decide to become his minions, and he trains them up. He sort of takes them under his wing a bit. Let me have a look through my notes.
Have you ever read Yahtzee Croshaw's first book?
No, I have not.
No, it sounds...
Is it sounding similar?
No, not... Like, the concept is, but it's one of those where these are books where the execution is everything.
Yeah.
So, like, I highly doubt this is any way like the one I'm thinking of.
The three characters are, four. Sorry, I've written three earlier.
Yeah.
There's four. One doesn't really get mentioned a lot, to be honest.
But this was early in his writing career.
Yeah, there's Annalise, who's a hothead and goes in sort of without the plan. There's Carmody, a catwoman, which again seems like a through line throughout his books. She's sort of a valley girl, a bit of an airhead. She really hates having any responsibility, but is big on cake and dessert, which is about as much character as I guess I could expect. Now, this next character really breaks the cat girl mould. She's Rana, and she's in fact a fox girl. She's the strong, silent type, really. For those of you that have played The Sims 2 on the DS... Think sort of like a half-female, half-fox Tristan legend. Sort of mysterious and aloof. She's a thief with a moral code and a mysterious backstory. And then there is, I was about to say of course, but it's the one I always forget, Morrigan, the elf magic user, of some kind of sorceress necromancer type. She did some black magic shit and was banished from her, like, tribal town for it. She has two ravens, who she prefers them to humans, and it's made explicitly clear she's not sociable. And she sort of uses them as spy drones, and sort of like a death machine that can suck the souls from people with their soul-eating abilities. They seem way overpowered for sidekicks. They're far more powerful than her, and seemingly more powerful than the god, who in every sort of situation, they have an encounter or a combat, and he says, well, I could just defeat them with the snap of my finger, but it'd be better, like a learning experience for you girls to do it, so go on. And in every a quarter of the book is him saying, well, I could defeat this foe, like nothing. But then where would these minions learn how to fight? And then another quarter of the book is discussing how sarcastic one of the other characters is.
Hmm.
That's half the book gone.
So, something that I'm getting a vibe for, I just want to ask, is the magic system a complete and utter mess in yours?
I'm not sure if it's a fault of the system, the main character, or the writer.
Okay.
But it does seem wildly inconsistent with who is powerful, where the crows are the most powerful, seemingly, and we assume, well, I assume.
Yeah.
That the crows are only with the half elf for sexual favours.
Right, of course. And that's just it. It's like the books seem to be, on some level, horny, but sort of like they want to tease it out as long as possible. And I know, like, it sounds odd to say that there wasn't enough sex, but frankly, over 13 hours, two sex scenes in a book that is listed as erotic literature.
Yeah. Well, my book was less horny and more sort of trying to be desperately romantic in a sexual way.
Right.
You know, like when you're, like, young and you don't really know what things are.
Yeah.
But you just want to be desperately romantic, but then, like, but sex is a thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, you're a teenager trying for romance, but your hormones are getting in the way.
A little bit, in the way they're described. Sometimes it'll start describing them as beautiful women and then go on to everything else about them.
Yeah. Okay, I get that. So, anything else you want to say before we move on to mine to sort of give a description of that? And we can discuss things further, I think, afterwards.
Yeah, well,
because then we can discuss comparisons and differences. And
I think I've basically got it all down. Oh, yeah, it tries to be strangely progressive in that it talks about race relations. At one point, the main character, the god, in
inverted commas.
That's the one.
Yeah, but he is.
Yeah, says a whole lot of stuff about him not being able to understand how hard life must be for them, not just because they're women, but also because one of them's a half-elf, one of them's half-fox, and one of them's half-cat, and that it must be very difficult to not really be truly recognised by either of your two races.
Yeah, well, see, I had a similar sort of line in mind. Mine did not start well. Did yours start well? You mentioned it was slow for the first half.
The first half was a bit slow before the characters got going.
Okay, mine started like absolute garbage. It took me 3-4 sittings to get past the first 15 minutes.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah. And that is because at the start of the story, there are three non-consecutive sections within the first 10 minutes where he talks about how much he really hates women. Now, the justification in lore of this is that he has grown up in a matriarchal society. And
Artemis takes life.
Yes, absolutely, I suppose. And maybe it's just that he wants to show that one gender being superior to the other is inherently a flawed system. But it's not like anyone needs to be told that. And he sort of sets up how... So, I suppose I'll tell you the background a bit, because it's important to it. The plot follows one man, Charles, who is in a desperate pursuit of power through science in a world filled with magic. He's one of the only men in the world afforded the title of Doctor. The role is entirely filled by women. And he's a man who must face his problems by outthinking them, in a world where he can be killed with no repercussions. And that's just for as little as treating a woman the wrong way. And you see, the premise there isn't so bad if you take out the fact that all the villains and the like are women. And essentially, it's in a world where women develop magical powers and men didn't. Yeah, that's fine. I'm more than okay with that as a concept. But then they took over society, which, though a possibility, is not handled the best.
Now, you raise an interesting point there.
Yeah.
About the main villains of the piece being women.
Yeah.
I found that.
Okay.
For a lot of the book, they're going after this god's ex.
Right.
And they get there, and there's a few awkward encounters, and it turns out she's a sarky bitch. But then it turns out that it's actually a different evil woman pretending to be this god's ex.
Right.
And then they just kill her.
Oh. Wait, so they kill the main villain of the whole...
Well, of that little journey we went on as a family together, yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't feel like this was originally planned as a standalone book?
No. Okay. Well, it sort of ends with them all celebrating and Carmody the Valley Girl is eating cake.
Yeah.
And it feels like they're about to just set off on something new.
Yeah.
And the god's like, you should eat less cake, but it's a celebration.
Wow, so it does sort of, like, it feels to me like the guy, I keep saying the guy because they've chosen the pen name Eric, so,
yeah, so we I'm going to assume that they want to be referred to as
the guy. It feels like the guy wants to essentially get ahead of any accusations of being sexist by saying at sometimes the right thing, but then other times he's his representative character is telling women what to do with their bodies.
Yes, I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, so that actually matches up with some of what happens in making Monster Girls.
Do you really have to try and remember that name?
Yeah, I keep wanting to call it just Making Monsters and then remember, no, he is very specific.
He only makes the girls.
Yeah, but that sort of ties into the start of the story. So it starts with him being berated by the Duchess of this town, Duchess being something that apparently came up in your story as well.
Yes, I believe it was an evil Duchess masquerading as the God's ex.
Yeah, so clearly he has issues with the aristocracy as well.
Yes, as do we all.
Yeah, of course. But strangely a specific one, yeah. Which I have less of an issue with. You know, very few dukes and duchesses have screwed me over thus far in my life. So he's being berated at one of her parties for not being able to create an army of super soldiers, which really sets the tone for the rest of the book, I feel.
That's a tall order, I think. If that's your requirement to get into a party and not be chastised.
Yeah.
Then I don't think I've ever been to a party where I shouldn't have been chastised.
Well, what's happened is he's only being chastised for that because he also has a dong.
Ah, well.
Yeah, which, I gotta say, the...
We've all been there.
Again, I cannot tell if his main character is meant to be an authorial avatar. That's the problem with it being written in first person and just occasional moments where it just feels like he's like, oh yeah, this is me.
Yeah, there's no sort of slip-ups by saying, and Eric did this.
Yeah. at least none that were in the audiobook version. Just as a sort of side note, because we have said a fair few bad things about it. Again, I want to reiterate that a lot of the characters you do end up caring about way more than you think you're going to, and I've actually listened to the first two books in this series already. I didn't just stop at the first one.
Yeah, by the end I was wholly invested in the characters and wanted to see where they'd go.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it would have felt to have a female perspective on this. I might ask one of my friends to try and listen to one of them, which I think would absolutely be a brilliant conversation to have.
I think so, if a little uncomfortable, and you'd maybe get slapped.
Oh, deeply uncomfortable, but I don't think I'd get slapped. I think.
Oh, not I'd slap you.
Yeah, so what happens then is he goes home after the party, and while he's there, he casually reveals that all the experiments he's done trying to create super soldiers have used prisoners, male prisoners, and that all these male prisoners have died. And at one point, towards the start of the second book, he reveals that he is responsible for hundreds of deaths, which...
That's a lot of baggage.
That is a lot of baggage, but he justifies them by saying he didn't kill them, the machine did. This is a machine that he has designed and built.
To kill?
No, to make super soldiers.
Well, not very well, you should rethink it.
And that's when the references start. The references, like him having a brain in a jar that is labelled A.B. Norman, but unlike the one from... Is it in the original Frankenstein as well? I'm pretty sure it's just young Frankenstein,
right? I think it may well be.
Yeah, and to sort of match the comedy of young Frankenstein, AB, as his character is called, is psychic and has a communication with him. And it starts with this interesting idea where it's like, oh, is this just a symptom of his fractured psyche? I almost said Eric then, even Charles isn't sure if that's the reason he can hear what AB is saying to him psychically, because apparently no one else can. And then he goes to try one more experiment with the last prisoner, and he accidentally finds out when the hood comes back that it's a woman, which, you know, and it's sort of played in that thing we've seen in cinema so many times where a character that is very clearly a woman in a hood, the hood comes down and
it is in fact a woman.
Yeah. And it's a I am no man moment.
Yes.
And, you know, she's all sort of upset with him and, you know, wants him to let her go. And he realises, oh no, if they find out that I've had a woman held prisoner here, then I will be killed for it. Because killing men, fine, whatever.
Fine. Yeah.
society doesn't care. The books several times refer to them as being beasts with the ability to talk. Not all wrong. No, but he's horrified to see that he's got a woman and panics, and so throws her into one of the chambers on his machine. And it's
a multifaceted chamber.
Oh yeah.
Machine.
So in the other chamber. So he's hastily constructed a third one, which is where the end result will be deposited. Yeah.
Okay.
The one chamber is where the prisoners go, and the other is where the magical gems go that will give them their powers. This is the last mention of those magical gems.
No mention of where they come from.
No.
Not like the heart of a dying star.
No, it's not like Jade City where there's this rare material that. No, just magic gems. No more specific than that. Maybe it's taken from Sailor Moon's staff. But don't find out. And whilst he is closing the door to the new chamber he's constructed, he ends up cutting a finger in the edge of the machine, and some of his blood gets inside. And then, wait for it, and then in the one where the gems are, he throws the lever, but before the machine activates, a cat jumps into that section. And what comes out is the Brundlefly. Or pretty much that is how it's done. The third chamber is filled with white smoke, and when he opens the door, there is a naked cat girl.
So a cat, his finger.
Yeah, and then a female prisoner.
Woman,
yeah.
A female human woman.
Yeah.
Turns into a cat. Where does the finger play into it?
Ah, this is yet another chance for ridiculousness to come in.
I'm all on board.
So, he is speaking to her. She has the knowledge of how to speak. It seems that she has many of the muscle memories from the human, but in fact,
a completely new animal.
Yes, and has the original memories, though, of the cat.
Fascinating.
Yes. And at one point, he's talking to her, and AB speaks to him, the psychic brain in a jar. And then the cat girl... Val is the name she adopts.
Short for Valerie or Val like Val Valiant Thor?
More like the latter, actually, considering that the Val that she gets is off a hammer in his toolbox. Yeah. So he suggests that maybe her full name be Valerie.
She doesn't take orders from no man.
But she does. Because she immediately comes out in love with him, which is thought to be part of the blood thing. Because what he does is he takes a blood sample from her. And something I've sort of skipped over is technology-wise, it seems to be some of it's in the 1700s. But what he does with the blood is he puts it into a machine that analyses it within several minutes.
Yes, you did mention that the other day, actually.
And it comes out and it's like she's got her own blood, but also some of his. In her, which he concludes is the reason she can hear the psychic brain in a jar.
Which begs the question, is the psychic brain psychic, or does she just now suffer the same psychosis?
Well, here's
the problem.
Can
anyone else hear the brain?
Here's the problem. The brain is alive enough to be able to propel itself with the remaining brain stem it has. So, the first book plays it off like, oh, it might just be that they've all got a shared psychosis.
Yeah.
Then in the second one, it starts talking about how they're erecting tubes through the mansion so AB can propel himself through different rooms.
Fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
It's like the post office with those little chutes.
Yeah. And the reason I asked you about the magic system is because in this, it is such a fucking mess. So females in this world have magical powers, as I've stated, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And they each, it's sort of suggested that it's...
Do all females?
Yes.
Right, okay.
But to varying degrees.
So it's like reverse haemophilia?
It's an odd way of putting it.
Men can carry the magic, but can't use it. Much in the same way women can carry the haemophilia, but don't suffer any of the consequence.
Here's the thing, the genetics start to come into it more in book two when they talk about...
Brilliant.
Houses that have specific breeding stock that they use. But the reason it's so utterly, completely ridiculous is it plays it like Avatar, The Last Airbender, not Blue People.
Yeah.
In the women of the world all have elemental powers, right?
Right.
And he is absolutely thrown when Val's ability starts to come in and she can make herself invisible, because that's obviously not an elemental power.
No.
No. I will say, though, despite, you know, this being a huge deal to him in the first book, in the second book, one of the noble women, it turns out, has the ability to mind control people, which I'm not sure which element that is.
Helium.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is elemental, sort of, in the loose sense of the term, because the Duchess, the reason she's the Duchess is because she is the most powerful one from the most powerful family. Just to clarify, if someone can, like, go into your mind and tell you to do something, they're the most powerful one, right?
Well, and that's how I've been operating in this family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like how Charles Xavier had to be a good guy, because if he was the bad guy,
he'd be
he
the
wins.
Baddest guy.
Yeah, he just wins. Forgetting that, she is immediately up for having sex with him, which he's not okay with for multiple reasons. First off, this is a monster.
True, but a horny monster.
Yeah, a horny monster, but also barely a monster. It is definitely more anime cat girl.
Yeah, seems more like just a slightly hairy woman.
No, she's not in any way more hairy than your average woman. It is cat ears.
Yeah.
And
hairy ears.
Furry cat ears.
Right.
Yeah. And a furry cat tail.
Okay.
But
like a bushy tail or like a thin tail, like a Siamese.
It's the thin tail because originally the cat was a Siamese.
Oh.
Called it. But so later in the book, the second
monster
girl. I'd
rather have a bushy tail, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Well, you'll like this then. The second second monster girl he creates is towards the end of the book. So it is harem in the loosest sense of the term for the first of the series.
But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, of course, and then build up. But the thing is, they're horny for murder. They want to throw all the women they can into this machine. They want to have more sisters, which is how they refer to them. But
creepy.
Yeah, it's extra creepy when you remember that they all share Charles's blood.
Not just his blood.
Yeah.
From the sounds of it.
Yeah. So they create a second monster girl. This is from a noble woman who is a major threat to them, named Delphine Valentine.
Good name.
You'll notice. Yeah, it would be a strong name if there weren't already a main character called Val to then have a character whose name is Valentine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it, yeah.
Yeah. She is described as being horrifically fat. I'm picturing, what's the
Matt Lucas.
What's the one that doesn't have bones in X-Men?
Oh,
it's not MODOK. Actually, MODOK is actually a decent comparison for how she's often described. And really horrible and quite old. And to just drive home that she is horrible, she maybe kills her sex slave men when she's done with them.
Like Atlantis.
And the creature she's combined with is a bear. A brown bear. And so they throw the switch and then open the final chamber. And in there, once the white smoke clears, is a petite woman. So clearly the parts you make don't...
Yes, this machine makes you better, if anything.
Yeah. And, like, I wasn't expecting it to be, like, so incredibly body positive that it talks about how, you know, she's got an absolutely massive waist, but she's still gorgeous.
Mm.
Because this is erotic literature.
Yeah.
And, but... So, she has little cute bear ears that are able to hide under a hat.
Mm-hmm.
She has a short, fluffy tail. And in the second book, it reveals that her pubic hair is naturally in the shape of a heart. Which
Sweet.
I cannot tell is if it's meant to be a Care Bears reference or not.
Ooh, yeah. That's a... Ouch.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Sharing is caring.
Yeah. And that's what I mean about references. Some of them are just wild, and some of them you're like, no, that's not real.
That can't possibly be.
That must be accidental. But humans are friends, not food, is definitely a Finding Nemo reference.
Yes, it is. Is that in there?
Yes, it is in the second
Brilliant.
One. Yeah.
Who says it?
I can't remember. It's towards the end of the second book, and I can't remember if it's after the third monster girl shows up.
Ooh.
And
well, we shouldn't get onto the second book yet. That should be next week's. So don't spoil what the third
monster
girl
is. Oh, I have so many to go through. Frankly, if we're doing one a week, it will take us a while to get through.
Well, let's not blow our load in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Because we still have to go over who is Eric Vore. And, that's the question, really.
I love that how much you built up to it and then just leant back as if you were done. Just
Well, I'm tapping out of this podcast.
Yeah, Jack, who is Eric?
Well, when you brought it up, what was your first? I don't look at my theories.
No,
what
no.
was your first theory?
My first thought was this has to be a bot to be able to write this much. And also, the reviews on the books. This is something we barely touched on. The reviews are not overwhelmingly positive, which, if anything, gives it more credence. They are very positive reviews for the most part. Some of the negative reviews are absolutely hilarious in the things they want to nitpick.
I'm just pulling up a few reviews.
Yeah. One of the ones for making monsters. Making monster girls. See? I always call it that.
You do.
One of the negative two-star reviews for making monster girls was someone complaining that... this is clearly based on the 1700s, and they didn't have fingerprinting technology then. Thing is, having listened to the whole book, fingerprints don't come up.
Well,
the blood scan, admittedly,
yeah, which is maybe is, yeah more to complain about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's one.
Yeah.
It's from C.R. Ryder on Goodreads. Underwhelming, which I find particularly hard to believe. Read this book because the author has two others that are good. However, this story was not quite about a dungeon. Moreover, this saddam old powerful god but hardly demonstrates any godly ability or powers, which is something I did mention. This story...
Wait, is the god's name Saddam?
It could be. I didn't pick up on that. He refers to himself as I or me.
Right.
So there's possibly something I missed. Again, like the sex. This story is dry and somewhat predictable, confusing departure from his usual fare. Now, if this is a departure...
Yeah, well, this is what I mean. It's because I got a very different feel from mine, where it was something that I've skipped over and something that I really shouldn't have, is the murder. Now, I mentioned the murder of 100 or so prisoners, but those happen before the story. And then there's the murder of the one female prisoner that we see. However, the other murders that come up are really out there. So there is a murder where he uses a block and tackle to cave a man's skull in. There is a murder where one of the catgirls rips out a throat. There is a mafia-style hit. And honestly, I'm tempted to put in the clip in the edit.
I would, if you can track down that clip. In fact, you've got the clip.
I've definitely got the clip, yeah. Of the mafia-style hit. Which we're going to put in now.
Mafia-style hit. Death, blood. Okay, we'll cut that out.
No, we're including that bit. So, from that you can see that he really seems to put a lot of care into the murder. All the characters seem more than okay with murder. And when you compare that to how he describes sex, I think we've got to put in the clip here.
We will warn you that there will be mention of a frothy seed. So if that makes you in any way uncomfortable, mute now for about 2 minutes.
Or don't, because... No, it's 48 seconds, the clip that I'm going to put in.
Okay.
But I will say, it's worth it to listen to. You won't enjoy it, but the face you will pull. Just take a selfie and look at it later, and it will make you laugh every single time. That's what I did.
Yeah, and in fact, if you do take a selfie, please tweet it at us with the hashtag... looking for Vol.
Yeah, or maybe Are You Eric Vol, since that's the one that I've got as the...
That is, in fact, our email address. Either send it to our email or tweet it with the hashtag Are You Eric Vol.
Yeah, and so it's areyoericvol@gmail.com, and there's no question mark in that because you can't include that
in
a Gmail
address. Yeah, we tried. Apparently it's not a thing you can do. So, take your head out your ass, Google.
Yeah, but that's not what this is about.
No, that's a separate podcast where we pitch about Google.
So here's the frothy seed moment. Oh, frothy seed.
Put it in me. But
I got
so tight.
You got to get and put it in you. Yeah. And so the problem here is that's one of the reasons why I'm thinking maybe Eric Vahl isn't a man, because, like, frothy is, considering it comes up in...
Yeah, you say it comes up a few times. It's in both books.
Yeah, and it's not, like, my go-to word.
It's not how I would describe it.
Yeah. And I'm not really sure where Eric gets it from. However, looking at the name as it's stylized on Goodreads, it may be that French is Eric's first language.
Yeah, you could be French Canadian, maybe somewhere from Africa. There's a lot of French speaking peoples in Africa. Or, now here's where things get a little trippy. He could be an experimental AI. It would be something that's never been proven to exist with this sort of, I hate to say the word intelligence, but I guess intelligence. But it would explain how he's so prolific at writing. He's been active for how long?
Like I say, 102 weeks.
102 weeks.
And 91 books.
91 books.
And though, like I say, the quality isn't... It's not Booker Prize winning.
No, it's like... It's probably somewhere in the middle of Stephen King's best and worst.
How I've described it is, I have before many times finished much worse books than this.
Yeah, in fact, I've got a novelisation of some of The Walking Dead, and it's far better than that.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Which is weird, because it started as a comic, so you'd think they'd respect... Never mind. That's not the point of this.
In fact, it's in the book heap behind me somewhere. You can have it and see if you can get through it.
Ah. If you're interested in novelizations involving zombies, though, I will lend you the novelizations for the Resident Evil games, which I first... So this isn't the first series of books I've started reading as a joke. However, people tend to agree that the novelizations of the Resident Evil games are far better than they have any right to be.
That does not surprise me.
No, the people who make them clearly care about them. And
much like Eric Vall cares about Catgirls.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he releases about every week in a day, 8 days on average. There is also the idea that it could be like a writing group, and that this is like a collective pen name, which would explain the 12,000 word a day batting average.
Which is also why we're going to be going through as many of these books as we can to see if the feel changes, because...
Yeah, because if it's multiple people writing, they'll have a slightly different voice.
Yeah.
It could be multiple people writing with an Eric Vall overseeing and editing to check the voice, but I doubt that.
Yeah. And also, with the things about forgetting the rules of your own magic system, I'm not going to say that's evidence either way, because I've definitely known authors to publish multiple books and sort of, you know, do that. Even books that are considered to be very iconic, like Harry Potter. It started out with a very sort of clear structure to what the magic system was going to be like, and then as the series went on...
It sort of became Magic Ex Machina.
Well, Magic Ex Machina mixed with the fact that they are spending... full time in boarding school and learn maybe 3 spells a year.
Yeah, that's not a good ratio, that really.
No.
Is when you think about it. I've never even considered that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh man, it bothers me so much.
Well, it does me now too. Thank you, Jake.
Yeah, well, and it's like how in the first Harry Potter game, you end up knowing more spells than Harry Potter knows by the time he finishes school.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that the PS1 Philosopher's Stone?
Yeah, Defendo, despite the fact that it's a very useful spell, never actually comes up.
Never comes up.
No.
Great game, though, by the way. I recommend everyone play it. It runs surprisingly well on an emulator nowadays.
Can we get away with linking that in the description?
I will do my best.
Boy, this has gotten a bit off topic. So, yeah, the... idea of it being a group of individuals sort of makes sense, because the other option is that this is one of the most speedy, let's use that word.
Overworked.
Yeah, because that's 12,000 words a day if they don't take a single day off.
Yes.
So I went to university to study creative writing. 12,000 words is around about my...
Well, I believe it's what's technically referred to as too much.
Yeah, because I think the highest I've ever been... Yeah? Try it. Stop for a minute.
I'm going to try and watch my mouse.
So like I say, I studied creative writing at university, and 12,000 words, I've only hit 3 or 4 times in the entire time I've been writing in terms of a daily word count. But as someone with ADHD, those are on my hyper-focus days. Mm. I wish I could manage 12,000 a day. But also, this is 12,000 a day of what gets into the final book.
Yeah, this is... Like this would have to be, like, at least, like, third, fourth draft stuff on the first try.
Yeah, absolutely. So the author that I can best compare it to is Stephen King.
In the 80s.
Well, Stephen King now, the reason he aims to get, I think it's something like 3,000 to 6,000 words of publishable stuff a day. And he does that by reminding himself that this is what he's doing to keep himself busy instead of cocaine.
Yeah, which is a good, you know, a good substitute.
Yeah, can't blame him for it. It's better for his life and his family.
And his nose.
And his nose, yeah. His septum thanks him. This is sort of the publishable output of when he was on cocaine, though.
Yeah.
And
publishable is used very loosely here.
What, you mean there was some weird stuff in that period for Stephen King?
Mate, I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Because frankly, some of the stuff that comes up is more creepy than Eric Vall.
Yeah. Which isn't odd, because Eric Vall's not that creepy.
Yeah.
More than anything, he's...
romantic.
A romantic fantasy writer.
Yeah, because... Again, even though Val comes out of the machine and immediately...
Val, not Vol, just to...
Yeah, well, that's just it. And the other character being called Valentine, when his surname, or at least pen name potentially, is Vol, is like, is it a clue? Is it meant to be? Maybe. Maybe. Eric Vall is a woman. It's something that I've been wondering about because of things like Frothy Seed. Because what man would describe
don't know
it?
What it's like.
Well, I just can't think of any
it's not
man
a soda
I know.
Stream.
I mean, yours isn't. But I can't think of a single man who would.
See a doctor, man.
Yeah, exactly. That is the response to it being frothy. It sort of erupts out like a bottle of Coke that's been shaken up too much.
Yeah.
So there
is another theory. And that's that it is, in fact, the pen name of a banned author on Amazon called Michael Scott Earle. Been unable to find out what exactly he was banned for. There are a few sort of
theories
and rumours going around about it being too horny. Stealing cover artwork for his books, which I'm after looking at some of Eric Vall's books. Yeah, that's a possibility. They're quite generic.
No. Having looked into this specific thing, the people who make the art for the Eric Vall books, at least the one who's doing Dragon Emperor, I found very quickly, and is very proudly displaying the work.
Well, there you go. So it was either that, or he's writing too much porn, or he was... overutilizing quote-unquote ghostwriters in Asia who were in fact children.
Yeah.
And it was less of a ghostwriting situation, more of a child slave labour thing. That could all be slanderous. So I'm saying allegedly. I prefer to believe it's not true.
Yeah. And, you know, if... what we do know is that this guy is no longer allowed to publish on Amazon.
Yeah. That seems to be the only consensus we can find.
Yeah.
But I've also heard, and through some research found, that it is illegal to publish books under someone else's legal name, and Amazon, you need to verify your identity.
Hmm.
So either he has a very willing friend or neighbour, or a very good fake ID, or it is in fact...
someone else.
Someone else, or something else.
Yeah. There is a truly standout thing in these books, though, at least the way we've consumed them so far. The voice acting.
The voice acting lends a lot of credibility to these books, I find.
Yeah. The one I had, it's two voice actors. The gentleman is called Alex Perron, or potentially Perron. I'm trying to remember the name
like
of the woman.
Pun.
Maria Parnes. Thing is, she... I suppose it's unfair to say she does the lion's share of the work, because Alex's performance is phenomenal, as you've heard. But the fact that this one woman does the voice of all the female characters, of which there are many, and manages to make them all sound distinct and interesting without any of them being ridiculous too ridiculous.
Well, I would like to just give a shout out to my voice actor, who was doing all the male and female voices, and for the first hour I couldn't tell it was just one man. So talk about distinct.
Yeah, absolutely. So Alex does also voice the male characters as well, but they are a lot more few and far between, which
I'm probably more generic if my experience is anything to go off.
Well, the main one, Charles... Well, you'll have heard in the execution a very brief exchange between him and another character who I'm not going to say the name of in case it wasn't in that clip. And I do encourage you all to listen to, at the very least. I will say, I recommend people listen to Making Monster Girls.
You know what, for Dungeon Master, if you've got a passing interest in fine fantasy and compelling characters and apparently a very brief sex scene, I can wholeheartedly recommend this book.
And I would say if you cannot find a... If you've got Audible and you haven't had anything for your free book this month, Making Monster Girls, absolutely better than having nothing.
It's got to be worth the punt.
Yeah, and even if you don't, like... Even if it's not for you, you will almost certainly find at least a couple of bits of it completely hilarious.
Yeah, I think there's something in there for everyone. I think that's what's so good about it, you know?
Yeah, something I did notice that I think Alex definitely did not do on purpose, that I'm counting as another sort of semi-reference.
Please tell me it's some sort of a lisp.
No, it's the fact that, as you heard in the... excerpt from the sex scene, when he says penis, it sounds like Solid Snake saying penis.
It does, and yeah. We're sort of basing that on what we would imagine Solid Snake that sounds like saying penis, because I know I've not heard it.
Oh man, you've not played the latest game, have you?
Not all the way through.
No, oh my goodness. Metal Gear Acid 7, oh, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Although I have briefly met David Hayter.
Yeah, and did you ask him to say it in the snake voice?
I'm afraid I did not.
Oh, I mean...
I think I asked him about X2, of all things. I was young.
No, X2, it's...
Really looking back, I was his type.
Well, and the thing is, X2, definitely in the better half of the X-Men movies. Hands
absolutely,
down.
That intro with Nightcrawler? Oh,
absolutely amazing. But obviously that's not what this is about. We're not doing an episode of Are You Eric Hayter?
No.
Eric Hayter?
Yeah, you made that one up. Eric Vall.
Yeah, or David Hayter.
Or David Hayter. We know who David Hayter is.
Yeah, potentially the writer for this. Put that on the theory list.
Typing it up.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Shit. Should have at least clicked there.
I hope we leave in the OFO.
So what I'm going to do in the interim between now and...
The next episode. Yeah.
Is I'm going to reach out to a few of his compatriots.
What do you mean by that? You're saying compatriots with a big question mark.
Well, they're all in the same genre. I assume it's a pretty tight-knit genre.
Yeah.
So there's people like... I can't believe this isn't a stage name or a porn name. Randy Darren.
Yeah, Randy Darren.
There's a few. I might try and reach out to Michael Scott Earl himself and just very accusatorily ask him, is he Eric Vall? And I'll also keep searching for a legitimate man called Eric Vall.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are certain things that I am going to try in the next week or so. But I will say, the way I'm going about it, I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to dox anyone.
Well, yeah, there you go.
I
got serious.
Yeah, well, that's just it. It's like I'm going to be working on stuff and listening to the books, but at the same time, I'm going to try and be as polite and nice as I can, whilst also just a little bit overstepping the bounds of what a random stranger should be able to do.
And also, in the meantime, we'll upload our audiobook bingo for you all to play along at home with. We've each got a checklist.
Yeah, and Jack is thus far winning.
Two
books in.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try and focus more on the research because my favourite part of this is the mystery.
Yeah.
I'm in it for the chase.
And the thing is, there's certain books in your list that have me so damn curious that after I'm finished my 45 books...
They're mine. Back off.
No, I look, they're yours for now, but...
Planet Broker in the bag.
Well, Planet Broker sounds like a really interesting...
It sounds incredible.
A bunch of them have very interesting concepts.
I think I'm going to get through the first one of every series.
Okay.
Because that's going to give me a wide spectrum.
Right, okay.
And then I should work through them all. I can probably get through, you know, 3 or 4 a week, I think.
Yeah. And I suppose I might give that a go. I tried to start Without Law, which
that's
is...
That's a post-apoc, right?
Yeah, post-apocalyptic, and the blurb for the first one literally mentions liberal snowflakes. So I don't have high hopes for this one.
I have exceptionally high hopes. I think it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah, well, it could be hilarious, but it also, given what we said about him occasionally wanting to seem woke... And then telling women what to do with their bodies.
Maybe he's just very good at writing in someone else's voice. He is the character.
Yeah. But there is also a line where it specifically mentions that one of the characters in Making Monster Girls, Daisy, the second Monster Girl he makes, specifically says that all women in this world seem inherently unhappy. But ever since they devoted their lives to serving Charles, they've been nothing but happy. So maybe all the women would be happier if they were serving men. And the book literally ends in a hilarious way. I've explained this to Max.
Yeah.
That's when the second sex scene comes up. And in the afterglow, I'm going to paraphrase, but one of the characters essentially says, "They'll pay. They'll all pay." And talks about wanting to take over the world.
Which is how I feel after every single encounter I have.
Yeah,
honestly.
Absolutely.
I feel like I could...
Take over the world
take
after
over the
a nap.
World, yeah. A brief refractory period and then I'm all go.
Yeah, and then the refractory period's over and you're just like, maybe just that first bit again.
Yeah, yeah.
And also... Did the topic of babies come up in yours?
No.
No, because it's mentioned briefly in the first one, but then really leaned on in the second, that these monster girls, they want to breed like rabbit girls.
Wow, well there you go. Yeah. So that's a whole other fetish.
Yeah.
Right, he's ticking the boxes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cats, foxes, bears, oh my. Breeding, monsters, girls.
Yeah.
Froth.
It's
got to be on a website somewhere, Jack.
Yeah, I mean, he's missing some of the classic kink ones. I'm not seeing any... none of them seem to be about giant girls, which I've been told is very big. Clicking the currently popular incest box with the fact that these are in some way his daughters.
Yes.
And they all talk about being sisters to one another, but have very, very progressive relationships.
But I must say, though, that at the very least, you can't say these books... rush into things.
I thought you were going to say, at the very least, you can't say these books are boring.
Well, there is that.
Even when they're a mess, they're a very entertaining mess.
Yeah, I mean, like I tried reading 50 Shades once, and I just ended up asking myself, where is the nuance in this, you know? Whereas in Eric Vall's work,
yeah,
he seems to just get it.
And that's just it. I've also tried reading 50 Shades, because at one point it was the best-selling book in history, except for the Bible.
Yeah, and let's be fair.
But the fact of the matter is, I wasn't able to get through 50 Shades, and though some of the, obviously there's all those extracts from 50 Shades that are ridiculous, and though Eric Vall's work is ridiculous, it's not ridiculous in the same way. It's definitely, I'll give him 6 E.L. Jameses out of 2.
Yeah, well I think I'd give him 4 P.L. Travers out of a box of chocolate orange, I think.
Yeah.
Because we don't believe in hard and fast scores here, Jack.
No, especially not when Eric Vall is sort of... His reviews seem to be split between 2 stars and 5 stars.
Yeah. No real in between, except for this one guy.
Oh?
Great start to the series.
Ooh.
A once powerful god gets banished to a dungeon to live for the rest of his time. He manages to escape. Now he gathers power to get back at those who wronged him. Not your normal dungeon core book. 4 stars.
Yeah. But yeah, the majority are either 5 stars or 2 stars.
Yeah.
And the majority are 5 stars. And
they all comment on different things.
Yeah, which again leans
so
into this whole...
botted reviews, we assume.
Or if they are, again, someone has just found the technology to make smarter bots, but has for some reason decided...
Kept it only to the literotica community.
Yeah. So I think that's about it for chapter 1
yeah
of this series.
What are you reading next, Jack?
Like I say, I've attempted to start the Without Law, but unfortunately the version I've got on my phone doesn't seem to want to play, so I'm going to try re-downloading that. I think I'm going to give a go to one of the other series, though, and like you say, get a wide view, because, again, there's that question of, is it a group of different writers? And I think, you know, by listening
because
to...
that would be a good way to separate them up, would be by genre.
Yeah. Or, you know, since the genre is always erotic plus X, and usually it's erotic plus fantasy plus X.
Yeah, whereas the... Well, his books seem to be more X plus erotic.
Yeah, X with a hint of eroticism.
Yeah.
It's a real sort of slice of life thing, where it's like mostly day-to-day stuff, and occasionally horny.
Yeah, well, I will be hopefully sampling... the rest of his wide gamut of work. Probably start with Planet Broker, then I've got to hit up some Succubus Lords. But hopefully by the next episode I'll have read at least one of all of them.
Okay.
That's my master plan.
Wow, doing that in a week, that is a bold move.
It's only 5 books.
Yeah, true.
4 books.
So I'm going to do the same. And we'll see where we are by next episode. So, but like we say, if you want to get in touch... areyoericval@gmail.com
And if you are indeed Eric Val, please do get in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. It will make for a very short series, but we're still going to keep reading your books.
Yeah, absolutely. And commenting on them.
Yeah. and the other thing that I'd like to say is feel free to tweet at us, because we're definitely going to get that Twitter handle before this episode goes up.
Yes, we really should, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do that now. So until next time, stay horny.
Signing out, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I just sort of had lived the stay horny thing. Yeah. But I think, is that how we're going to finish from now? By the way, I'm imagining sort of background music playing over this bit, and our voice is quite quiet. Yeah, you know, like when you see the newscast, it's really good. Yeah, now we're getting louder. Oh, the horny's
moving. Oh, no, the horny's moving.
Oh, no,
I'm so horny.
It's the horny monster. Oh.